Welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design, the Dr. C podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, or simply Dr. C. Tune in every 2 to 5 weeks, every Monday, as we explore the unique journeys of entrepreneurs. Our podcast sheds light on the paths entrepreneurs have taken in their respective industries. Each episode, we dive into the stories of entrepreneurs, their challenges, triumphs, and the insights gained along their journey. We believe in the power of innovation, resilience, and the entrepreneurial spirit that drives success. Together, we'll learn from a diverse array of entrepreneurs united by their passion for making a difference. Now is the time to unlock the secrets of entrepreneurship. Now is the time to be inspired, to learn, and to craft your own path to success. Join me, Dr. C, as we embark on this journey together.
I'm so glad you're here today because we have a phenomenal guest with us, the renowned mental health advocate and psychiatrist, Dr. Fred Moss. Dr. Moss is a keynote speaker, a respected psychiatry expert, a trusted witness, a talented podcaster, a compassionate mental health coach, and an inspiring teacher. With his extensive experience in the field of mental health, Dr. Moss has helped countless individuals overcome their struggles and lead fulfilling lives. And thank you so much, Dr. Fred, for being here today. And I would love for you to just dive into your journey, how you got here, and then we can go a little bit deeper.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you. So it's really great to be on your show. I appreciate it, Dr. C. And here's the story. I really came to this world to be a healer. I was born to be a healer. You know, I was born to heal. And it was actually the first thing I did when I popped out 65 years ago. I was born to a family that was in a fair amount of chaos and disarray, as I'm told. I had an older brother 10 years older than me and an older brother 14 years older than me and my parents, and things were a little bit out of control. So who I was born to do was heal them first. Like there was that's how I came up, being sort of a bundle of joy, like a joyous bundle of joy. And I was laughing and joking, and I brought smiles to everyone's face. And I think that's really where I learned that I was a gift, you know, that what I had was the gift of healing. And then I would just wanted to exploit it over time using communication. So I'm not going to handle you all 65 years of the whole thing. But, you know, as through elementary school, even, I was really just enchanted with the whole idea of communication. I would watch my family communicate. The whole idea of like communication and connection and conversation was so interesting to me. And, you know, there was no elementary school teachers who ever forgot having me as a student. That's for sure. I talked a lot. I really enjoyed communicating, but you know, it took me a while to realize that school wasn't going to be the place where I learned how to communicate. In fact, in school, I was more or less like muffled or smothered, you know, from speaking what I really thought. And we all know that inside of the educational system. So junior high and high school were that way until I finally thought, well, university will be different. That's where free speech is. That's where protests happen and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I went to my favorite university, University of Michigan, and I started there. And after a year and a half of realizing that that too wasn't going to give me the place for communicating, I dropped out and I took a bus all the way to Berkeley to find myself. And then, you know, that worked good for the summer, but ultimately that wasn't sustainable. And I was told about a new industry that it was opening up that was probably in the future. And that industry was called computers. And Michigan had the only computer in the whole state. It was a 2-acre facility. And I came back to actually learn about computers. I lasted for a little bit less than a year and dropped out again because I wasn't going to just be that wasn't going to be my life. And so I left again. And shortly after that, my mom, may she rest in peace, my mother was really eager to get me a job and got me a job as a child care worker as a state mental health facility in, Northwest Detroit. And it was there where I really got to finally start getting paid, reimbursed, if you will, for interacting with people, communicating with people and connecting with people, just 7 years my junior, only by realizing that they're just humans going through the same kind of stuff that I'm going through and really connecting with them, really getting them, resonating with them. And that's where healing started. And I finally just decided that I wanted to be a psychiatrist, not because I love psychiatry, but because I hated psychiatry, actually. Mm-hmm. I hated the twist and turn that psychiatry was going into at that time, in that it was becoming a medication field. And I knew that the real work was done with communication. So I thought I would go into the field and sort of, you know, keep the place light by bringing communication in. as we all know, over the next 30 years or so, 30 or 40 years, the whole field has been typecast over time, you know, not much against my will. It's to become a pharmacological field, a psychopharmacological field, biological psychiatry, chemical imbalances, et cetera. So given that I had already put some sunken costs in there and already was a doctor, the next 25 or 30 years of mine were spent essentially, whether I liked it or not, becoming someone who knew how to diagnose people and then knew how to medicate people, supposedly. Mm-hmm. Each prescription that I wrote didn't sit well with me. And I wrote over 100,000 prescriptions in my 30 years. So I learned over time again that I was just trying to ease in communication wherever I could. And eventually, I decided that medicating people really wasn't necessarily aligned with my core values. And I started doing something really radical, which was taking people off of medicine and then taking them off of their diagnosis and see how they did. And they did great, like reliably great. When they came off their medicine, they found their lives back. And it was like, these were my lower risk patients. And I just want to let your listeners know that under no conditions am I suggesting that if you found some medicines that work for you, that you should come off of that. If your life is working on the diagnosis and the medications that you're taking, then please, please, please continue down that road. Like if you found anything in this crazy world that's working for you, you should continue down that road. Yeah. This is more directed to the hundreds of millions of people who don't feel that way, however, who feel that the psychiatric field has either failed them or misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed or overdiagnosed them. And those people should know that there are multiple ways to take on psychiatric or mental health discomforts that don't include being diagnosed and taking medicine. So that's what I learned over time. And over the next 15 years, I eventually created and then, was the founder of Welcome to Humanity, which now is sort of self-explanatory. Welcome to Humanity is an entity that really takes into consideration all human experiences as being exquisite, whether they're miserable or beautiful. Like every human experience is amazing. And we've been given an opportunity to feel the pain or feel the grief or feel the tragedy or feel the miracles or feel the ecstasies or feel the beauty, whatever we have. And that's part of being human. So being uncomfortable doesn't mean that you're sick at all. And even knowing that you're sick doesn't mean that you're sick, because almost all of us actually know that we're different than everybody. It's like a normal human trait to believe that we're different than everybody, because we compare our insides with everybody's outsides, of course. Right. So the fact that we think that we're abnormal or that we even know that we're abnormal actually makes us normal, because everybody believes that about themselves. So when we really get down to business, it is very likely that maybe in many cases, there is no mental illness, even if the person is pretty sure they have one, or even if other people, other diagnosticians have created a diagnosis that fits. Right. So part of who I've become since Welcome to Humanity is helping people reconnect to their basic core selves, because everyone knows what they really want more than anything is to be heard for who they are. Yeah. People want to be listened to and heard and respected for who they are and who they're not. And what I do is really actually shine a light on that. So the two books that I've written have been aimed at that, The Creative Eight, Healing Through Creativity and Self-Expression, and the book called Find Your True Voice, which really helps people dig underneath the cobwebs and the rust and the dust and get to their true voice, which they don't have to recreate. They just have to rediscover. It's there. It's always been there. The same voice that's been there since you were two or three is there now. Mm-hmm. And you can rediscover that and be able to tap into that and then be able to communicate it effectively into a world that is very eager to hear your true self. Mm-hmm. We have learned over time how to fabricate or exaggerate, mm-hmm. Take what is our true voice and, you know, modulate it, like change it in ways so that we get what we want, or maybe we're afraid in most cases to speak our true self. Mm-hmm. We're afraid that we're going to be thrown off the island or ostracized or be too disruptive, et cetera. So mm-hmm. we don't do it. And what I'm suggesting in my books and in two courses that I've written is that what the world is really calling for is for us to bring our true voice forward, because inside of true voice, that's where the magic always occurs. And indeed, all healing takes place in human connection, all healing of all conditions of all types. So even what we're doing today, as I speak to you, as you listen to me, as you question or ask questions or your curiosity, this is healing not only the two of us, but other people by creating a space for what authenticity really can look like, what core values and, you know, true selves really look like. And when we can be honest with ourselves and then speak towards that honesty, it's like a well-tuned tuning fork. We can all resonate together harmonically. And indeed, that's where healing emanates from. So that's how I've gotten to be who I am today.
Oh, I love it. And I so appreciate you sharing that because it's been quite the journey. And I think it all started from very young age, being able to communicate. I think communication is the foundation of every relationship, whether it's personal, professional, family, every capacity, but really being able to focus in on really taking care of ourselves, using our voices, being able to be heard, seen, and validated. And I love that you've created such a beautiful community of supportive space to really allow people to come in and be their true selves, because it's all there internally. And I'm just really curious, based off of your experience as entrepreneurs, there's a lot of mental health stigmas and misconceptions and myths that happen throughout our journeys, and really being able to create that supportive space. What can entrepreneurs do in order to create that inclusive space for themselves and those around them?
Well, it's a really great question. I appreciate it. So, you know, I think what people really can do is realize that whether or not someone has been diagnosed by another person with the condition, whether it's obsessive compulsive disorder or social anxiety or post-traumatic stress disorder or bipolar type 2 or narcissistic personality disorder. Some people talk about being on the spectrum. Some people talk about having some depressive disorder. Some people talk about, you know, some sort of ADHD or whatever they talk about, that person is no different than you at all. And maybe, just maybe, there's nothing wrong with them at all. And if you can listen to everybody as if they just are another human going through this life of ours, and actually hear the person for everything that they stand for, including the stuff that you disagree with or you think is out of bounds, then you are doing everyone a great favor. It's not a matter of stigmatizing. Stigmatizing is usually a concept that's based on a preconceived notion that there already is an inherent diagnosis. What I'm suggesting is that this person may not even have a diagnosis, even though they've been given one. Right. So it's possible they have one. You know, some clinician gave them one and they agreed to take it on. It's sort of like, you know, you're an elephant. Yeah, doctor, I have a big nose and I like water too much. And then the doctor says, okay, well, you're an elephant. And then you go look it up, an elephant. You're a little bit heavy and you're like, wow, I meet all the criteria for being an elephant. I'm an elephant. And then you start walking around like you're an elephant and everyone starts treating you like an elephant. And the people who don't treat you like an elephant, you just think they don't know the truth yet. They don't even understand what elephant is, because you do understand that, because you are one and no one should challenge you. You're an elephant. Your doctor told you, you agree. And so other people agree. And it says so right there on the internet. And then you end up being an elephant. And you know, as if you're unwavering. But the truth is, you were never an elephant to begin with. There was no such thing as you being an elephant, even if you had a bigger than average nose and liked water and even were a little bit heavy or had a great memory, let's say. But the opportunity really exists for looking at people without a diagnosis and realizing that mental illness in and of itself is a rather vague concept. Mm-hmm. Inspired, you know, meaning that what looks like mental illness in Little Rock, Arkansas, isn't what looks like mental illness in Singapore, or it isn't what looks like mental illness in, you know, in Reykjavik or in Auckland or in Ottawa, for that matter. And the opportunity really is, if that's true, if it has multiple definitions, then it's not really real. It's a culturally based phenomena. Because I need to tell you, if I walk into Singapore with a broken arm, mm-hmm. they're going to know I have a broken arm. And if I walk into Auckland with a broken arm, they're going to say, wow, he's got a broken arm. No one's going to deny my broken arm in different countries. But the mental illness, or the idea that I have mental illness, is very vague and very transient and, you know, it's really underdefined. And when we start looking at that, we can start realizing that the people we attribute a mental illness to are more a factor of the beholder than of actually the client. Right. So, you know, people get diagnosed because the beholder, the diagnostician, sees them as being out of bounds or meeting a criteria for a particular condition that they think they have a handle on. And then they just nab it and put it right onto these people. And then that person becomes that diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, again, it's a really tricky business, this diagnosing stuff. And if you could treat everyone like they're just humans going through the human world, then not only will you not stigmatize, you'll be able to create an authentic playground for all of us to communicate with and find a way to allow that for others by doing that same thing.
I love how you put that, because, you know, it's so interesting. When I was going through grad school, going through the DSM-5, I was like, oh, this is me. I have this diagnosis, yeah. I have that diagnosis based off of the criteria. But I love that you said it's treating the person and what is going on with them. And they're a human being. They are going to have experiences that have shaped them, but it doesn't mean it defines them. And I think one thing I struggled with significantly was giving diagnosis, because I worked with insurance. So I had to give a diagnosis in order to get the reimbursement and whatnot. But I would struggle with it because I didn't want to put a label on somebody. And I think that's the hard part, where we get these labels and then people are defined by them, when in reality is they're a human being. They're going through something tough or having to deal with the stressors of life, especially in business too. There's a lot of stressors that happen. And I'm really curious, based off of being a mental health advocate that you are, what advice would you give entrepreneurs who may be facing high-level stress and pressure in their business ventures? How can they prioritize their mental well-being while striving for success?
Right. So you can find what I have created recently called my roadmap on my website, which is drfred360.com, drfred360.com, where I really take a look at some of this. But one of the things you really can get is that the stressors that you're experiencing can be managed by really just taking care of yourself. So for instance, you know, there's mindfulness, or there's nutrition, or these detoxification or resilience, there's spirituality, there's multiple ways, you know, including creativity, that really help us stay grounded. Mm-hmm. And we all need to do those. This is a crazy world that's stretching us in so many directions that are completely unfamiliar. If you've met anybody recently who thinks that this is not unfamiliar to them, then they must be lying in other areas of life as well. Because this is totally unfamiliar for all of us. We're being stretched in ways that we were not familiar with even just a few years ago. And that's through our technology. And, you know, my wife has to compete with my phone all day long. The truth is, I'm more attracted to my phone than anything else in the world, including my wife, my kids, and my meals and my sleep and everything. I mean, I am picking up my phone. I almost can't help myself. And I'm thinking that it's really, really important for me to do that. Like, somehow that's got to check. Did anyone call me? Is there anything new in the news? What happened in sports, or what happened, you know, what's my next reel, or how many people have liked my last post, or whatever I'm thinking. And the truth is, you know, if we don't take care of our own basic self in the areas I talked about, the areas sort of outside of our mind and outside of our impulses, mindfulness and nutrition and detoxification and resilience, and actually start taking care of ourselves in ways so our relationships are seen as primary, our actual relationships with humans now, even more than the rectangles on Zoom. Now, we think that we're interacting with people when we're with those 3x3 or 5x5 meetings on Zoom, but yeah, those aren't interactions with people. That's talking to a TV. That's what that is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the day when I first started psychiatry, back when I was going through residency, so that was like in the mid 80s, the number one indicator of someone psychotic, the number one indicator literally of someone that we needed to hospitalize, was whether or not they talked to the TV. And now, if you don't talk to a TV, you're psychotic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how is it that it used to be the number one psychotic symptom, and now it's become something that we all do as a state of normalcy?
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a vague and constantly in transition concept, this notion about mental illness.
Absolutely. And it's crazy how that changes over time too, because back in the 80s till now, it's 2023, and just the things that have changed and transpired since, But I think there's a lot of stigmatizing to when it really goes back to just being taking care of ourselves, prioritizing ourselves with nutrition, with mindfulness, with all these other strategies that we can put into place. Where a lot of times when I would see clients in the clinical setting, I'd be like, have you gotten a physical? Like, make sure there's nothing nutritious, like nutrition wise is off, because a lot of times they might just need a little bit more vitamin B versus like what they're experiencing, and just being aware of that, taking a holistic approach. And I love that's what you do too, to really help everybody that walks through your center as well. And I'm curious, in your work as a mental health coach, what have been some of the effective strategies or techniques entrepreneurs can use to manage their emotions in particular, but also have a positive mindset during challenging times? Like you were saying, there's so much going on in the world.
Right. So it's a great question. Again, I truly appreciate it. So one thing is to get that you are not your feelings and emotions. That is not you. Like we think it is. We feel or we emote something. We're like, I am tired. I am mad. I am, you know, sexy. I am interested. I am. Well, actually, you're not. None of those things are you are. There's something that's experiencing those symptoms, but that something is who you are, but you're not the things that you're emoting. You're also not your body, for that matter. You're not your body. It's something that you have been given as a gift to walk around the planet with, but you're not your body. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, as someone who's trying to make a difference in the world, usually I imagine the people on your, you know, on your listenership, as well as other people that I've heard you speak with, are people who have conscious intentions in the world, like actually wanting to make the world a better space.
Right.
If you want to make the world a better space, the one thing to do is really get in touch with who you are and who you're not. Like, what is your true voice? What do you stand for? What matters to you? What is really concerning to you in this world? What are you not expressing that you wish you would express? Who are you not speaking your truth to that needs to hear your truth sooner or later? You know, Henry David Thoreau said it best. He said, you know, the mass of men go through lives in quiet desperation and go to their graves with their songs still in them. Mm-hmm. To me, that's one of the, if not the greatest tragedy of all of life. What is a life for which nobody ever got to know you? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that an entrepreneur needs to do is, even though they are terrified that they might be disruptive or might make too much trouble or might be misunderstood or in some ways ostracized or eliminated or canceled, is to speak their truest voice, at least incrementally take steps towards speaking what really matters to them, to the people who need to hear it, even if they've never done so up until now. So the idea is, you're going to be afraid in either way. You're going to be, and you have a choice. You can be afraid and speak your true voice, or you can be afraid and pretend to be somebody else. But the truth is, if you pretend to be someone else in order to protect the person that you are, it's completely ineffective. And it's ludicrous. It's totally preposterous. It's totally absurd. Like, seriously, can you hear when I say that? Like, if you're pretending to be someone you're not in order to protect the person that you are, that doesn't even make any sense. And some people do that so well or so thoroughly. And, you know, yours truly has done it. And the idea is, you know, some people go to the even extremes of actually saying things that even they don't believe. Dr. C, what the hell is that?
I don't know.
What is that? What is that when you actually spit something out that even you don't believe?
Yeah.
That's not even a lie. That's beyond a lie. A lie at least has you realize that you know you're not telling the truth. Yeah. But some people say things like it's what they really mean, when in fact it isn't at all what they really believe.
Right.
Things have reached that level of extremeness. It's like so crazy in this world. And they say it with authority. And they don't believe. And then they say it with conviction. And you're like, really? You believe that? And they're like, maybe not. It's like, well, what is that? You know, what is that? And that's when we really start seeing how twisted we've all become about, you know, about fumbling around with what is our true voice? What is our core value? What is our honest message? what is our resonating harmony that we want to deliver to the world about who we really are?
Yeah, so well spoken. And I think too, it's so hard for people to really be their true selves because there's a lot of fear of if I show myself that I won't be accepted or it's not normal, or all these preconceived thoughts and assumptions that we go through. But I'm really curious, because why do you think people do have such a hard time to really say what they mean, be open, and be who they are?
Well, it is really true. You've already touched on it. I think I also touched on it moments before. It all has to do with one four-letter word that starts with F. And it's not that word. It's actually the word fear. Mm-hmm. That we're all just afraid. And we think that we're so afraid that we get to alter our own truth of reality in order to deal with what's fear, what's making us terrified or making us scared. And we're willing to actually alter that truth, even though that we know we're doing it, even though the price of altering truth is like infinite, you know, like infinite, right? If we alter our own truth and then actually pretend to be someone we're not in order to protect the person that we are really making a very, very hard sale at that point. Yeah. We don't have very much to say about the world that's coming at us, but we do have a little bit to say about what we say. Like in the next moment, you could say anything. Your past is not dictating the next thing that you say.
Right.
Mm-hmm. The next thing that you say, you could say, whatever that is. You could say anything right now. Mm-hmm. Ian, now, we're going to say what you say, and then you may actually think, that you're like saying what you mean. But the truth is, once you start saying what you say, I'm sorry, you may say what you say and then blame it later on it being your past that dictated it, but it isn't. Mm-hmm. In the next moment, you have an opportunity to say whatever it is you want to say, just like we all do. Mm-hmm. For the time being anyways, the First Amendment still stands in this country, and it's something I'm a big proponent of, the First Amendment, quite a bit. And it's very important that we have the freedom of speech to say what we say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people really need to realize that we can say anything, and it doesn't dictate what is going to move forward. And being able to have new information gives us a new perspective sometimes, where it changes what we might have said in the past and be able to move forward from it.
And that's right.
And I'm really curious, because just even building everything that you've built, I know you do a lot of speaking. I know you've written books. I know you've been a witness. What have been some of the challenges or obstacles you've had to overcome in this entrepreneurial journey?
Wow. So I think the real challenges are, in a reductionistic way, if I start taking away people's diagnosis, or I start taking away people's medicines, or if I start taking away people's like fabrication and exaggeration of what they say, it's hard to create a valuable entity that is a sustainable, scalable entrepreneurial opportunity. Meaning, what do I do? Like, what is it that Dr. Fred really does? Mm-hmm. And what I really do is I optimize people's lives. I'm a life optimization specialist. But in order for me to find customers have to agree at some level that their life isn't optimized and that they somehow need me. Mm-hmm. And this is a big challenge for a lot of entrepreneurs. Your product may be spectacular, but do your customers know that they need you for the solution to their problem? Mm-hmm. So the biggest thing I think I have is a problem that many entrepreneurs have, which is, I think I've got a spectacular product, but how do I let the customers, my ideal client, my avatar, how do I let that person see what I have and then see that what I provide is a solution to their problem? I believe that's the biggest challenge I've had as an entrepreneur. And I think I share that with probably millions of others of entrepreneurs.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's a big one for a lot of entrepreneurs. I think you're spot on. I know it was part of my journey too, but being able to overcome them too, and really meeting people where they're at, if they're ready to take on that service and ready to optimize their life and knowing, okay, this is what I need in order to move forward. And I know in just a lot in your podcast, but also speaking engagements that you've done, you talk about the importance of resilience and overcoming obstacles. What are some of the practical steps entrepreneurs can take to build resilience and bounce back from setbacks on their entrepreneurial journey?
So, you know, failure, thank you for that great question. So failure, you know, there's so many people, like whether it's Tony Robbins or other philosophers from the past, who really speak to the value of failure. Mm-hmm. So like failure is really just the next opportunity. It's not something to be afraid of or something to quit after you fail. We were taught so early on in our conventional education that failure is a bad thing. People laughed at us, or you failed. If you failed, you could be held back to another grade, or you could, you couldn't proceed, as if failure was in some ways a really bad thing to go through. But if you're not trying, you're not failing, or if you're not failing, you're not trying. Let's put it that way. You're like failing a lot is a really good idea. So one of the spaces to really become resilient is to get that failure isn't nearly as bad as we've been bred to believe that it is. Mm-hmm. So when we fail, even in a relationship or in any kind of project or any kind of opportunity that we take on, it's really good to incorporate that as being an excellent experience, a true learning experience, one that's an opportunity unfolding for us. Mm-hmm. So that's one space. And then in the other space, I think, this idea of resilience, like where do you come up with resilience is, learning, mm-hmm. like really learning not only from our failures, but from our successes. So yeah. When things work, like go ahead and repeat them, go ahead and do them again. And when things don't work, it's okay not to do those things again. Are you willing to try something new if the last thing that you did didn't move the needle forward? And that's the kind of thing that, it sounds good coming out of my mouth. And I think it sounds good for most people. I don't think very many people would like overtly disagree with that, right. Except it is difficult to take that step. Can you really learn from the things that you've done that are wrong? Most people, or many people, they have some degree of sunken costs, meaning some degree of commitment to, having reached a point where they now are failing, and they choose to keep failing because they've already learned so many times on how to be who they are. And that even if who they are is a failure, like I have a couple clients who mm-hmm. are just failing miserably with respect to their businesses right now. And it's really hard to dislodge them from what they're doing, because they're pretty certain that they need to keep doing exactly what they're doing, even though it's creating massive failure everywhere. Mm-hmm. Because yeah. familiarity really, really, trumps reasonability in many cases.
Oh, yes, it does. And I think to your point too, a lot of people have this fear of failure based off of how the school systems are set up, just exactly how you outlined. And I think I had a fear of failure and success, both entities, but I never liked to fail. And so I had to learn the hard way when I first started as an entrepreneur, because I failed miserably multiple times. I did different things. I did switch it up so I didn't continue to do the same mistake over and over again. But I think there's so much beauty in failure, and it's having a different conversation and definition to it. And I think that can help so many people, just like what you're saying too. It's when you learn from those failures, you can really succeed. And it's really good information to take, and okay, tweaking something, one little tiny tweak can change everything. And I'm really curious, because I know you said some of your clients right now are failing in their businesses and you're helping them revive them essentially. What have been some of the success stories, one or two, if you could share with us, of what you've been able to really help your clients with?
Well, I think the number, thank you for that question. I think the number one success story that I have that was pretty common and had, there's a number of people who have given me very beautiful testimonials about it, was in the process of giving people their true voice, using as a template none other than podcasting. I taught many people on how to go from zero to podcaster. So I had tens of people take my True Voice podcasting course. And then that was the precursor to my True Voice course, where you can find that at truevoicecourse.com. And that course uses podcasting template in the background to help people rediscover what it is that really matters to them and speak it openly into a world that's eager to hear them. So I have a number of people who didn't even know what podcasting was, who are now active and avid podcasters, that I walk them through actually learning how to speak their true voice, creating a title, creating a whole format, creating a show, and then who are now really appreciating the whole idea of having a playground or a platform that they can speak their true voice, and also have great interviews and great conversations with guests and even a raving fan listenership.
Oh, I love it. And, you know, it just goes so aligned with your brand too, just finding your voice, but like what you believe in and what you're really doing to help people use their voice in a platform where they can be heard, seen, and validated of just different capacities of what they want to speak about, interviews, whatever it may be. But I just love that journey that you're taking so many people on, because it speaks volume, literally. But even with all the success you've had, I'm so curious, what are one or two tips, maybe even three, that you give entrepreneurs that are on this journey of entrepreneurship?
I think if I had to pick two or three tips, one of them would be it's a long play. It's a long play. Yeah. It just is. It's always a long play. I more than anyone I know, I'm so excited by shiny object syndrome. I go chasing the next guru, or I go chasing the next thrill, or I go chasing the next promise as good as anybody that I know. You know, if someone's going to offer me a big bunch of something that I want, whether it's money or fame or no, or, you know, authorship or authority or something, and say that I can get it easy and fast, I'm listening. I'm just listening. I'm naturally listening. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, unless I really take on the notion that it's a step-by-step process that takes everything into consideration, and building a foundation, like building an infrastructure foundation, is what's required to create a scalable, sustainable, lucrative business. And get that it's a long play, that, you know, in order to create 1,000 people who love you, or even 100 or even 10, depending on where you are, it actually takes interacting with those people. And you're going to have to do that. You know, there's a long play. It's not, people might be able to promise you, you know, 100,000 Instagram leads or something, 100,000 Instagram friends. And what do you think that's going to do for you, really? What, all of a sudden there are people, you're on their list. You think your stuff is going to roll by them and they're going to become raving fans? Because that isn't really how it works. It's really important to get that relationships are at the heart of all of this. And there's a long play involved a little bit. You might be able to hit it big here and there early on in your entrepreneurship, maybe get a big success, maybe get a, you know, 4 or 5 figure contract or something working for you. But the truth is, in order to create something that really is making a difference and is sustainable, there's a little bit of a long play that has to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think relationships are the foundation of everything, because that's how you build a business. That's how you communicate. And that's what we were talking about in the beginning. Communication is such a key element in everything we do. And, you know, just what you were saying too, of the diagnosis of being able to tell somebody who's psychotic was talking to a TV, but also now it's just those communication factors of how we can really communicate in different capacities. But at the heart of that, it's building a true connection, a genuine connection, where you can be able to help someone. You might not be able to help them, but you might know somebody who can, or vice versa.
Exactly.
And that's what it's about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Beautiful.
And just with all the businesses that you've been able to accumulate and also help with other entrepreneurs as well, what are some of the tools that you've used on the back end in order to build your business?
So I think, you know, I was anticipating this question as you mentioned that you might ask it to me. And so, you know, when really using proper tools, it's these communication tools that are really interesting. So you want to be able to, for instance, use whatever communication tools are available, whether that's Telegram and Signal or Voxer or, you know, software tools like Zoom or, you know, Microsoft Teams or even, some of the platform tools for podcasting. It's really important to use and have a working knowledge of all of them, as many of them as you could, and to be not afraid and to be able to communicate effectively on those. In respect to like CRMs or, you know, whether you're using, whether you're using a task-oriented programs for like Trello or Monday or whatever kind of, I don't even know the differences that well. And I have a team. So I think that one of the things is team building, you know, really having experts that are working around you you can delegate. You don't have to know every single piece of what it is that your team uses. You can hire people, and that can be anywhere from someone that you know in a physical space, or even these days you have access to international virtual assistants that you can hire from different countries. from Nicaragua or from Philippines or Costa Rica, multiple different countries where VAs can emanate from. And then, you know, as far as like course production, there's Kajabi, and the one I like the most is Kartra. And I think it sounds to me like you can't get very far without at least having a working knowledge of Canva and a working knowledge of Slack. It seems to me that at least both of those or the clones that work with Canva and Slack are really important to move any kind of business forward in these days.
Yes, I can attest to both of those. They're definitely helpful. Thank you for sharing all those different tools that you do get to utilize. But I love that you mentioned the team building piece too, because I think that's a really important aspect, especially if you're trying to build and scale a business as well to bring people. Again, it's that connection.
Exactly. Yep.
And I'm just really curious, with all the things that you've already accomplished, what are your future goals or aspirations for everything that you're up to in the next year or so?
Yeah. So I kind of told you I was here at, I'm here in New Jersey today, and I'm in a parking lot in between Staten Island and Ellis Island with the Statue of Liberty over my shoulder. And what's really, what my intention is to actually have this brand of mine, the Dr. Fred brand, the life optimization specialist, the Welcome to Humanity founder, have this all working in a way that's a little bit more automated, that I can trust my team to manage everybody who enters my ecosystem with exceptional customer service, that I can offer products and services that are aimed at exactly what people want and need, and be really confident that I'm delivering a reliable product, like, you know, like actually meeting their wants and needs, and then following up with them without harassing them so that they are getting everything that they want, and any kind of new problems that develop, that I'm there for them to continue to provide. So entrepreneurs, you know, it's way easier to retain clients than it is to go cold calling and find new clients. So, you know, once someone hires you for that first chunk of time or the first chunk of money or the first project, it's very possible and it's highly suggested that you can see or foresee what it is will be their next problem and be there for them for that as well. So there's something about really building an automated system that is prepared to take on the next problem that the last solution actually created.
I love that. And I can't wait to see it continue to grow and you help more people than you're already helping.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And where can people find you, Dr. Fred? We're going to link everything below, but if you could let us know too.
Well, the truth is there's lots of places to find me, but I've been instructed recently to just create a really fine site, which I'm going to give credit to my friend Ray Perez for helping me with. And that's at Dr. Fred. I've already mentioned at drfred360.com. At drfred360.com. And from there, you can get a spoke of that's like the hub of a spoke of my entire wheel. And you can see every single thing that I'm on. And you know, you can go learn about my books. You can learn, there's plenty of freebies on there that I invite you to take on. You can get PDFs of my books. You can get introductions to my courses. And more than anything, you can contact me. And there's a place in contacts where you can text me. And I invite your listeners to text me with their full name and their email address so that I can know that you heard this show and that you're interested in you know, what it is that I'm up to. That doesn't mean that I'll necessarily call you back, but there is also a space for a discovery call. So I'm going to offer a special, a special discovery call for all your listeners, which is the 30-minute, pretty highly valuable meeting. It normally is $400. I'm willing to offer that to your customers for free so that we can discuss what their wants and needs are. And if it's not me that's going to provide it, I certainly have a wide enough network that I can give them a proper referral for somebody who can help them.
Thank you so much. That was so generous of you. And thank you for coming on and just sharing all your insights and wisdom. Well, some of it, I'm sure there's a lot more you could have shared, but I so appreciate your energy, your time, and just everything you're doing to make the world a little bit more welcoming and open to taking care of themselves from the inside out. So thank you for coming today.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Exactly. Thank you for having me on, Dr. C. Really great to talk to you.
Absolutely. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment below. What was the biggest takeaway from Dr. Fred today? I'm sure he would love to see that comment, and we'll see you on the next episode.